welcome to a special Sours style episode of
Brutal Battle.
Yep, it's like we typically do with the style episodes. We did the barley wine one last time because of that Brutal Battle Royale we had. So we just recently had the sour beer Brutal Battle Royale. So here we are doing our special sour beer style episode, which I think is going to be very interesting because I didn't really know a ton about sour beers when we started the podcast years ago. Probably about 2.5 years ago now. And I knew nothing about sour beers. I just knew they were out there, and I had no interest in trying them. Now, I like some, and, you know, I'm...
Wait, did you say I like some, or you like some?
I like some, oh, yes. So. I guess I ran that together a little bit. I like some.
You
I
don't like some. All,
but I, you know, I was interested when I started doing research for this, because I do research for each of these episodes. So it was kind of cool. And for this, I'm actually going to, for different subcategories of sour beer, I'm going to read the BJCP history notes from it, which BJCP is for beer certification. Beer judge certification program.
What's this? Beer certification.
Beer judge. BJCP.
BJCP.
Yeah. Did I say BCJP? I may have. I don't know.
I don't know.
BJCP. Yeah, Beer Judge Certification Program.
Okay, got it.
So they have actually a lot of good stuff on their website, so you can do a search on that, and they have
good resource.
Yeah, they have a lot of like style notes on how styles should taste and smell and the history of where they came from. So I got research from other places, but I am going to verbatim read some of the BJCP sub-styles because I thought the history on them was really well done.
Now, so, do you have... reference, so you have a reference list that you could email the viewers, listeners.
Not doing reference lists. Okay. We are not a scholarly podcast, at least not yet.
You didn't use Google Scholar.
No. So we actually, for this episode, we have 4 beers that we'll be trying as we talk
and
about
everything. And they're all big beers.
No, I mean...
Well, larger in size.
Well, they're all more than 12 ounces, but, you know, some are like 500 milliliters and, you know. But anyway, so... We're doing 4. If you remember, for the barley wine style, we did 3 because of really high alcohol content. And then we finished the beers after we're done with these episodes. So between the two of us,
I know,
finishing barley wines and, well, 2 barley wines and a wheat wine, is going to be a lot if we did 4. But for sours, we can do 4 because they're low in alcohol, usually.
Well, he had all 4 out, and I was like, oh my God. I'm like, we're going to have to make sure we do this on, like...
Yeah.
A weekend, or make sure we have enough time to drink them. But yeah, they're all really low in alcohol. So
the main exceptions for sours when they get higher alcohol content is because they're like aged in like bourbon barrels or other spirits or, you know, stuff like that. So, but anyway, I mean, what do you know at this point about sour beers? Probably about what I knew. Well, probably a little more than what I knew.
They
when
taste
I started.
Sour.
Yeah, basically.
That's about it.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn. It's really interesting, so I hope we all get something out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, do I pour the first one now?
You can start pouring it if you want to. I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, some preliminary stuff, which I know, I'm sorry, you're not necessarily excited for this episode.
No, I mean, it's, whatever.
That sounds like excitement to me. Okay, so at one point in time, basically all beers were sour beers. Because there really were no pure yeast cultures.
Hmm.
And one of the main reasons for that was, well, first of all, wherever people were getting yeast originally, they couldn't get one specific strain. It would usually be like kind of an amalgam of yeast, whatever's there. Plus, you have the added aspect of when you're moving yeast from one batch to the next batch, whatever you're picking up in the air when you're moving that, because there's yeast all around us in the environment. So
there's no way to keep it sterile and
right, exactly, unless you have an actual sterile environment. And nowadays you can have controlled use of yeast that create sour aspects. So that's why you really, really can do some awesome sour beers now, because they have sterile environments and they can choose basically one strain of yeast that will give a type of sourness that they're looking for.
Now, are you also going to be talking about wild?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'll reserve my questions for later.
Yeah. Yep. So basically all beers used to be sour at some point, because you really just, I mean, at least to some degree, and you really couldn't,
that makes sense.
Couldn't change that. now sour beers are intentionally made sour, obviously, usually using these specific strains: Lactobacillus, Brettanomyces, and Pediococcus. They're most commonly used for souring nowadays. The only thing is, they're unpredictable, just because batches can differ in how active they are, or how much funkiness or sourness they're going to be able to impart. Some end up achieving tartness by adding fruit during the secondary fermentation, well, to create a secondary fermentation process, or also to contribute, you know, microbes off of the skins of the yeast or of the fruit as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it'll give like some more funkiness, sourness off of that. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I don't know if people know, but the difference between, you know, the first primary fermentation and secondary fermentation. Primary is basically, you know, when the yeast feeds on the sugars from the malt. And sometimes, you know, if you're home brewing, like when I did, you are adding sugar to it as well to feed the yeast.
Mm.
So that's the primary fermentation, because it's the first one that happens. Secondary fermentation would basically be after the primary is done, and then you're throwing in fruit, which is adding extra sugar that the yeast can continue to feed on.
So the secondary would only occur if there's fruit added?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to, technically, you could add other sweet things
So any sort of extra, anything right. that you add that would add a sweet element.
But they're saying for, you know, the research I found was saying for, like, sour beers, they'll do a secondary fermentation with fruit, because a lot of times fruit will give a tartness anyway from the juices that it'll emit. And then it also will, you know, further ferment. And then also, like I was saying, the microbes that could be on the skin of the fruit. So, and just another little bit, Rodenbach Brewery in Roeselare, Belgium, is one of the oldest sour beer breweries in the world, started in 1820.
Hmm.
So that is an old brewery right there, and they've been doing sours for quite some time. And obviously they're doing a really good job, because
we love our Rodenbach.
We do on the show, if you've heard us. So to get into, I'm going to get into one of the subtypes right now, and that's what we have sitting in front of us to try right now. And then we'll try that and come back. So one of the subtypes of sour beers is the American Wild. There actually is no information on the BJCP about American Wilds, because they're relatively new. It refers basically to the use of unusual yeasts, and it has absolutely no style guidelines. So, and obviously, like it says, American Wild, it's the American way of doing it. They're not following any typical style guideline, which you'll hear a bunch of style guidelines for other beers that are sour, but this is the one in that category that actually has absolutely no style guidelines. So if you're making a sour beer and, I don't know, say you were trying to make, like, you know, one of the other styles, like say you're trying to make like a Berliner Weiss or a Flanders Red, and you screw it up, you could just call it an American Wild, because it doesn't need to fit any sort of guidelines for it to be that. So, all right. So that's the first segment of information. Now, what beer are we trying here?
It's by Wicked Weed Brewing. The name is Royal Cachet.
Cash.
Ah. It's a cache?
You might say it cachet. I don't know.
Well, it's cachet.
It's French. Okay. For all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Wicked Weed's Royal Cache or Cachet Barrel Reserve Series. It's the Passiflora Blanc.
Passiflora Blanc.
Yeah. It's a barrel-aged wheat wild ale with passion fruit and hibiscus.
Which sounds amazingly tasty.
It's described as bright and sessionable.
I will say that it's
brewed with Brettanomyces.
Okay, yeah. I know they actually do a lot of Brettanomyces stuff, so.
It's 3.89%.
That's
ABV.
What I'm saying. Low ABV on that.
Well, you can tell by that it's going to be sessionable.
Yeah, well, so. Yeah. I think low ABV typically makes a beer sessionable.
It's a beautiful color, though.
Yeah, it's like real pink. I mean, I guess that's, you know, the passion fruit. And hibiscus. Hibiscus gives like that kind of coloration as well. And by the way, Wicked Weed is out of Asheville, North Carolina, just in case anyone wanted to know.
You just get a ton of floral notes.
Yeah, it's very, very...
I mean, you can tell it's a sour because you smell it. You have that sour...
That funk. I mean, it's not, like, a large amount of funk to it, though. It's pretty in check. This has funk, a little bit of tartness on the nose. It's very dialed back. It smells very delicate. You are getting that floweriness, which, since we know there's hibiscus in there, I mean, obviously, you'd be like, oh, it's hibiscus, but I wouldn't know what hibiscus smells like otherwise.
I was going to say honeysuckle.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. It's definitely got a honeysuckle-type nose on it, which, you know, maybe hibiscus smells a bit like honeysuckle.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And passion fruit. I know some passion fruit. The passion fruit in it is very light, in my opinion. I mean, you can get it, if you keep smelling, you get it to peek through a little bit.
It just smells like flowers and honey.
Yeah. And that kind of funkiness that you get from Britannomyces, with a little of that tart aspect coming on. It also smells a tad bit buttery, in my opinion. I smell a little bit of butteriness. So, you already tasted
it. I taste it. This is good. I'm not, like, really big into sours, because it just...
Oh, it's so light.
But this is just really, it's very drinkable.
Hmm. Well, it's a beer that just, like, kisses your palate.
It's just so light and delicate.
It's got nice, carbonation on it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's when like the perfect amount.
The body, the carbonation, and the delicateness of the taste reminds me of, like, a champagne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like well, I mean, technically, champagne is from a specific region in France called champagne, but sparkling white is what they call it, like a sparkling white wine. So it really reminds me of that. You could say this is kind of like the sparkling white wine of beers.
Well, and I feel like with the name, the Blanc, you know, you typically hear that more with wines.
Yes, very true. Oh, man, it's like so refreshing, so light, so delicate. You get flavor, but the flavor falls off relatively quickly. I mean, there's some that lingers there, but it's also kind of watery, but not in a bad way.
And then you're just left with, like, a mild, like, tartness. But
it's, mild tartness, mild funkiness.
But it's comes not with overpowering at all. I really like this, and I usually don't particularly care for sours.
I get that honeysuckle type of flavor, too, and that little, like, kiss of passion fruit.
I feel like this would be a great beer to pair with a lot of different food.
I would go all day with different cheeses with this beer. Yeah. I mean, cheeses with this would be phenomenal. It's such a light, interesting beer. I like it a lot.
Yeah,
it's
I really like this.
Super easy, super tasty, very nuanced type beer. I like it. And it's sessionable, as it says. It's
it really is.
Very easy to put down. So I think the nose is very much coming through in the mouth. Like, exactly how the nose is how it's tasting.
Yeah. Mm. I like it.
And I'm getting a little bit of that buttery note.
It's very, too. It's just, very delicate.
Mm. Yeah, it's tasty. I like Wicked Weed.
I think I poured more in your glass.
Yeah, you poured a lot, but it's so easy to put back.
Yeah, I can help you. Know?
Like, the sourness isn't, like, making it hard
to get it down. Why don't I finish that while you go on to the next one? Okay, you just finished it.
Slam it. Can you give me some water?
Okay, keep reading.
Because we're going to want to rinse in between. Okay, rinse, so... I'm going to do two more styles, and then we'll try one of those styles mentioned. So the first one we're going to talk about is Berliner Weiss.
Which I love.
Yes. Berliner Weiss was once the most popular drink, actually, in Berlin, Germany.
Oh.
It's usually around 3% ABV, so once again, pretty, you know, low in alcohol. And it uses lactobacillus, typically, for its souring. And a lot of time, per the culture around Berliner Weisses, they would use different flavored syrups in order to counteract some of the tartness when drinking it. So,
cool,
you know. So the history behind Berliner Weiss from the BJCP website. Original specialty of Berlin, referred to by Napoleon's troops in 1809 as the Champagne of the North due to its lively and elegant character. Only two traditional breweries still produce the product.
Hmm.
Only two traditional breweries. Right. There are other breweries who are doing Berliner Weisses, obviously. So,
obviously.
You know. Obvi.
Obvi.
You know what I mean? Obvi. So,
Huh.
Okay, so you got the Berliner Weiss. You have any questions about that Berliner Weiss, though?
No. No. I guess I do like more sours than I thought, because I do like Berliner Weiss.
Yeah. And I remember one that we had that I really, really liked some time ago. It was by Perennial Artisan Ales. It was their Peach Berliner Weiss. It was... It had just the right amount of tart sourness. It was, like, relatively low, and then it had tons of peach flavor. It's like they packed so many peaches into that beer. Mm. I loved it.
I think of the one we had at Iron Hill Brewing in Lancaster. There was a, there's a couple locations.
I can't remember how that beer was.
Honestly. Oh, well, I think it might have just been, like, the first one I had, and I was like, oh, this is, like, a sour beer, and I'm actually enjoying it. Maybe that's why it's so memorable.
And we did a taster. Didn't they give it to you two ways?
Yes.
And one was with a syrup, wasn't it? It was like a marshmallow syrup or something.
Yeah, but what did they call that?
I don't even remember what they called it. But yeah, they said some sort of special syrup.
Something. I forget the name of it, but yeah.
Oh, I do remember that now. Yeah. That was good. Okay, so a little extra information on Goes. This is actually from the German Beer Institute that I picked this information from. Actually, I'm sorry. It's not even... Technically, it's not said Goes. People in the United States a lot of times will call it a Goes, but it's said Goza. If you're German, it is Goza. Yeah. So Goza is an ancient sour and saline tasting ale made from more than half malted wheat and the rest malted barley. The brew is fermented with both yeast and lactic bacteria and is spiced with both coriander and hops. It is brewed with slightly salted water. This peculiar beer style is now most closely associated with Leipzig, which is the capital of the German state of Saxony.
Hmm.
There's a ton of extra information about Berliner Weisses on that website, but Goza's. But I don't want to read all of it because it's just so long. So go to it. It's just germanbeerinstitute.com, and you can read all that information. It's pretty interesting. So do that on your own time. Rebecca, that brings us to yet another beer. What do you have?
Okay, so we have a collaboration beer by Siren Craft Brew and Stillwater.
Stillwater Artisanal Ales?
Yep. And it's called When the Light Goes Out.
Which only works if you say it the American way of goes and not goza.
When the light goes out.
Well, I guess that does work.
Yeah.
It still works.
When
the light goes out.
It's a black goes.
Black goes, which I'd never even heard of before. I've had goes before that are like straight up. Never a black goes before. That's part of the reason we picked this one, because it's interesting. Anyway, I'm sorry.
And it's 4.2 ABV.
And to let people know, Siren Craft Brew is out of the UK. And Stillwater, obviously we've talked about it before, Gypsy Brewer, you know. He's, you know, like, stationed out of Baltimore, but he goes all over the place.
Now, what makes it a black goes? Just because, I mean, obviously, the coloration, right.
But, so, that would mean more, like, roasted malts were added.
So, that's the only...
Well, and if you remember from what I read, it said, I think it said over half wheat in there, and then the rest of it's barley. So... Typically, they use lighter barleys for the gozes, their gozes. Okay. So in this case, Brian Strumke and Siren Craft Brew decided to go with darker, roastier malts to see what a black goza would be like.
Okay, this is interesting because I've never seen a bottle of beer with the ingredients on the side.
It happens from time to time.
Yeah,
I know Off Color Brewing out of Chicago does that a lot.
Okay, well, the ingredients are barley, wheat, volcanic black salt, hibiscus, another one with hibiscus, wheat, and hops.
There is hibiscus in here, huh?
Sorry, yeast and hops.
Yeast. They didn't say what type of yeast, huh?
No.
All right, smell it and tell me what you get.
I just smell a lot of, like, I get the hops and I get the malt.
I get some hops, but I smell a salinity. I smell that salt in there. And
I smell something. I can't put my finger on it yet.
I smell a nice sourness that's smelling citrusy, which I think might be that hoppy aspect. But then I'm smelling the sour tartness.
I'm not getting any sourness. Well, maybe
you're not smelling sourness? I'm definitely smelling it. But it's kind of mixed with a flowery smell, which I would assume would be the hibiscus. And then if I keep smelling, I'm getting the slightest hint of a chocolatey, roasty aspect
it's
on the end.
It's kind of the nose is very complex because you're getting a lot of, just looking at it, you have obviously it's a dark beer, so you're expecting the dark flavor, those profiles, but it's...
You can smell the wheat in it, too.
Oh, yeah. 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 Okay, I'm tasting.
Wow, that's super interesting. It's very layered on the nose. I'm hoping it tastes the way it smells.
It's not as flavorful as I would have hoped.
Oh, there's a decent sourness. There's a decent saltiness to this. And it's finishing very salty, to be honest, with a little sourness. It's mainly salt and sour.
Yeah. I really like the salt in these beers.
Nope. Yeah, and it's kind of like, it doesn't taste like when you just get something really salty, like concentrated salt. It just tastes a little like salty water.
Maybe like volcanic black salt?
I don't know what volcanic black salt smells like or tastes like. I don't think I've ever had that particular salt, but...
Yeah. I really like a lot of Gozas. Gozas?
Gozas.
The Gozas?
Gozas.
We were going to use it for the show, but I wanted to drink it earlier this week. The Victories...
Kirschgoes. Which was a regular style goes with cherries added to it. It was really good.
And very light, delicate. Sean and my sister Erica were talking about it on that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my sister telling me it pours like a cherry 7-Up. And it does look exactly like a cherry 7-Up.
Yeah. Kind of smells like it a little bit, too. Yeah.
And it's really good, but it has a lot of nice salty qualities, which I like.
Which, you know, going back to this, when the light goes out, it is very tart on the finish and very salty on the finish. I do get some citrusy, like, hop notes in there, and I get that weedy type flavor. I get a little bit of kind of like a soy saucy aspect.
You know, I almost said that for the nose. I was like, I'm getting a little soy sauce.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. I mean, you sometimes get that with, you know, roastier malts, and I think that's really, it is in play on this one, so.
Yeah, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. It's not amazing. I'm getting a little bit of that flowery aspect, too. I'm assuming the hibiscus. There's a lot there, but you have to work really, really hard to get it. Most people will probably just taste it, and without really trying to pick it apart, will just be like, oh, it's sour and it's salty, you know?
Yeah.
And then maybe they'll pick up a little bit of, like, the soy saucy aspect or something, but...
Those characteristics are much more subtle.
Mm-hmm. Very subtle. It's not bad, though. I mean...
No, it's good. I
like it. I'll finish it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely... It's not, like, it's not a dumper.
Dumper. Those damn dumpers.
But I do like the Wicked Weed better.
Well, don't reveal that.
Sorry,
yet,
sorry.
We talk about what we want to rank them at the end.
Sorry, you know? I knew you were going to say that. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, Harlan's going to...
You can't give it away.
I gave it away for free.
keeping the secrets, you know what I mean?
Okay.
All right, so going on to two more styles, and then we'll try one of those styles. Excuse me while I drink some water real fast. Got to keep rinsing these glasses with water because... You want to make sure that you clear out the sourness from the previous beer before tasting another one. All right, so the next style we're going to talk about is a Flanders Red. Now, usually red, it is fermented with the usual brewer's yeast, which is the strain Saccharomyces cerevisiae, that strain of yeast. And then it's usually put into oak barrels for aging. Sometimes, a lot of times, the mature beer that's been aged in those oak barrels is blended with younger reds, sour reds, Flanders reds, if you will, to maintain consistency of product. Hmm. So, you know, if you think about, I don't know if Rodenbach only does Flanders reds, but I've only had Flanders reds by Rodenbach, and they do them really well because, obviously, they're such an old brewery. But if you think about it... It's been pretty consistent. Like, what I remember from that 2010 oak-aged one to the next one, they've tasted basically the same from what I can remember. Actually, I've had three bottles of it before, and all of them, from what I remember, tasted the same. And that would probably be because, you know, they give it a little test. They see what it's like after it ages in those oak barrels, and if it's tasting a little, you know, off, then they'll take younger version of the Flanders Red and blend it in there to kind of come out with their desired taste. So, BJCP, history aspect of Flanders Reds. The indigenous beer of West Flanders, typified by the products of the Rodenbach Brewery, established in 1820 in West Flanders, but reflective of earlier brewing traditions. Beer is aged for up to 2 years, often in huge oaken barrels, which contain the resident bacteria necessary to sour the beer. It was once common in Belgium and England to blend old beer with young to balance the sourness and acidity found in aged beer. While blending of batches for consistency is now common among larger breweries, this type of blending is a fading art.
Oh, really?
So I guess not a lot of people doing that, you know?
It's interesting.
Yes, it is. So that is Flanders Red. Yeah, you can start pouring if you'd like. And then the other one we're going to... Oh, do you think you're going to have a something going crazy?
I don't know. I can't even problem? Get it.
Heart. Ah! There you go. Don't injure yourself opening that thing.
Whew, that was a tough one.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so the other one I'm going to talk about right now is the Flanders Brown, or as it's more commonly known, an Oud Bruin, as people call it. So the Oud Bruin is darker and not aged in oak. That is the main difference between it and the Flanders Red. It uses cultured yeast for sourness. Now, cultured basically means just one specific chosen style of yeast. Didn't specify exactly which style, but... It's an old ale tradition, indigenous to East Flanders, typified by the products of the Leefman Brewery, now owned by Riva, which has roots back to the 1600s.
Hmm.
Historically brewed as a provision beer that would develop some sourness as it aged, these beers were typically more sour than current commercial examples. While Flanders Red beers are aged in oak, the brown beers are warm-aged in stainless steel. So there's the big difference right there. So I've noticed in my time when I drink, you know, a Flanders Red versus an Oud Bruin, the Oud Bruins are significantly more sour because they're not aged in those oak barrels, which I believe the oak kind of mellows the edges of that sourness out. So there's one of the huge differences with it. But And I believe from what I read that, you know, Oud Bruins are like an East Flanders thing and Flemish Reds or Flanders Reds are like a West Flanders thing. So,
okay, you're saying Flanders or Flemish?
Flanders Red. Okay. But some people call it a Flemish Red.
Okay. So, okay.
Same thing.
Okay.
So what do we have here?
So we have a Flemish Old Style Sour Ale by... Oh my gosh, look, I did.
You injured yourself.
I did injure myself. My knuckle's bleeding.
You're bleeding.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. See what I do for the podcast?
I'm going to have to pay you workers' comp.
Yeah, what the heck? Okay, anyway. So it's a Flemish Old Style Sour Ale called by Slap...
Slapmutsk.
Yeah. There you go.
Slapmutsk.
And it's called Floss.
Yeah, and Floss stands for Flemish Old Style Sour.
Yes,
that's what Floss means.
Got it. And
where is it? What's the brewery called? It's Slapmutsk. Well, where are they out of? Somewhere in Belgium.
Yeah. Something I don't even want to try to pronounce.
Okay. Okay, and
I'm looking for the ABV. Oh,
it's
right
on
there.
Front.
5%.
Okay. The coloration on it, it's very red, obviously. It is Flanders red.
It looks like a red brown.
It's a Flanders Red. What do you know? Yeah. Very much a red. When you swirl it up, there's a lot of carbonation.
Yeah.
A lot of head.
It smells like plastic.
It does smell a little funky, honestly. It's got a bit of a funk to it. There's a lot of sweetness coming through on the nose, too. I'm getting a little bit of like a... It's kind of skunky smelling, to be honest. I hope this isn't a bad bottle.
I feel like this... It kind of smells like... When you get, like, a new shower curtain, and you open it up, and,
yeah.
Like...
I could see a tad bit of that plasticky. Yeah, that's, like, new plastic.
Ew. And it smells like a skunk's butt.
Yeah, it kind of does. It is skunky. Like, other than that, like, I smell, like, those kind of, like, rich, you know, red, ambery malt sweetness, like I was saying. I'm getting a little bit of a fruity aspect on it. Like, light cherry on the nose.
This is turning me off. I can't even smell it.
Okay. Well, if that's... Did you get anything else other than plastic and skunk ass?
Nope.
Well, I got some of that cherry and that sweetness. And
I can't get past the skunk. Plastic skunk.
That's okay. Try it. Because yeah. Maybe it'll taste... I hope it doesn't taste the way it smells.
Mm. Oh, it doesn't taste anything like it smells.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. That's very fortunate for Slapmutsk. It's very subdued.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
I like this.
It's very easy. I actually get a decent amount of an oaky characteristic in the mouth.
Yep.
Which is giving a little bit of like a vanilla-y aspect to it as well.
There's a lot of tartness on the finish, though.
There's a lot of tartness on the finish. Getting a little bit of a cherry aspect mm-hmm. to it as well.
I could definitely see that.
It's tasting nice, but I feel like... I don't know. I feel like it could be a hell of a lot more sour.
I was expecting this to be a lot more sour.
Right, but the oak has really yeah. kept it in check. But I will say that this, in comparison to, like, Rodenbach stuff, I feel like the Rodenbach is typically more sour. And it's a lot more robust flavors coming at you.
You're getting... I feel like it's... The flavor profile is much more complex. This is kind of... I don't want to say one note, but there's yeah. not as much of a complexity. There's still multiple layers of flavor.
It's pretty good. And I would say Slapmutsk did a good job. But I'm guessing that Rodenbach has been doing it since 1820 because they're good at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, having had the Rodenbach, you know, Flanders Reds, I think they're outstanding. So they know how to do it. And I'm sure they're doing it for consistency. And they're doing it where they're, you know, after it's matured, they're going and finding the younger stuff to blend in. And then bringing it to where they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like, and I might not be right in saying this, but this seems like it's more of the other approach where it's, you know, we're going to mature it in the oak barrels and then whatever comes out is what it is. You know, not trying to up the sourness or up the robust flavors yeah. mm-hmm. after the fact. Because I'm getting a decent amount of barrel on it.
Yeah, this is, you know, with the cherry notes, and I do feel like it's, I feel like brandied cherries.
I don't get any brandy type.
Well, in my head, I'm thinking of like.
But there's cherries.
Yeah. I feel like this would be better with a dessert, and I feel like the Wicked Weed is going to be better with your appetizer or entree.
Or by itself. Just like yeah. being its own thing.
Yeah.
I get, you know, honestly, I think you hit on something. I think this Flanders Red in particular would be nice with some food. I think it would be well enhanced by having food with it.
I feel like it would be very good with the dessert.
Mm-hmm. Like, maybe like a brownie with with vanilla
of.
Ice cream.
Yeah, I definitely was thinking of
and
the
then
brownie.
This.
Yeah.
Brownie vanilla ice cream. Yeah, it would be nice. Okay, well, we found the yeah. use for that beer.
Okay.
I still have a bunch that I need to...
I keep pouring you more.
I know. Why are you doing that? What are you trying to do to me?
I'm not really sure.
Actually, I'm not really, like, feeling anything because you're so low
yeah,
in ABV.
Yeah, you don't even taste anything.
What is it? It was, like, 3.8, 4.2, and 5.
This is a 5.
Yeah.
That's a heavy
We're going
hitter.
Up, though.
Woo! Mm. No, we're not. This next one's only 4.
Well, we were going up.
Oh.
All right, can you water me? And yep. I'll then get to the last bit here. Last bit is not a whole lot. Then we'll do our last beer, and that is what it is. Okay, so lambics now we have. We have is a lambic. A lambic is usually has its wort cooled overnight, exposed to open air, then put in barrels for spontaneous fermentation. So that is kind of wild. You know, those are wild yeasts, wild ale in a sense. Few pure examples currently exist of lambics because most of them end up being blended, which is then called a goose.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Or they end up being having secondary fermentation with fruit, which then typically turn them into things like creeks or framboise. Now, creeks is with cherries, and it's like a Belgian style of lambic done with typically Morello cherries, which are sour cherries, and framboise, typically a French style of a lambic, which is done with raspberries, because frambois is the French word for raspberry.
Oh.
So, and, you know, when I said that they're typically blended, when they're blended, they're gooses, the typical way that people do a goose is they'll take a 1, 2, and 3-year-old sample of a goose and then blend those together into the final product. So, although I guess, you know, you can do it however you want as long as you're blending it. But, okay, here's the BJCP information on the lambic. Spontaneously fermented sour ales from the area in and around Brussels stem from a farmhouse brewing tradition several centuries old. Their numbers are constantly dwindling. So apparently lambics are going down, down, down. And then BJCP also has some information on gooses as well as fruit lambics. So I'll give you the fruit lambic first. And that is spontaneously fermented sour ales from the area in and around Brussels. Da, da, da. Same numbers constantly dwindling. Some are untraditionally sweetening their products with sugar or sweet fruit to make them more palatable to a wider audience. Fruit was traditionally added to lambic or goose, either by the blender or publican, to increase the variety of beers available in local cafes. And then a bit of history on the gooses is some are untraditionally sweetening their products as well. Oh, it's the exact same as the one for the fruit lambic, so.
Okay.
There you go. So the big difference. Out of lambic comes creek, frambois, and goose. So there you have it.
So this is technically a lambic.
Right. Why don't you go ahead and tell everyone what we're drinking for our final beer.
Final beer. It's by Westbrook.
Westbrook Brewing out of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, I want to say.
Yep.
Okay, yes.
It is called Gozu?
Yep, Gozu.
Okay. It is brewed with coriander, sea salt, and yuzu. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's a, I don't know. I'm not even going to venture a guess.
Yeah. And, it's 4%.
So we went down. I'm sorry. I still had water in mine.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that's right. I didn't even pour
you. Yeah, you didn't. Cause I still had water sitting there, but you go ahead and start smelling yours. Sorry. Tell me what you're getting. Okay. And I'll catch up to you on that.
Man, this is very interesting.
So what does it look like to you?
Oh, sorry.
It's very light orange in coloration.
It's a little cloudy.
It's got a decent head to it. Yeah, it is a little cloudy.
And man, this smells like...
What does it smell like?
Lemon iced pound cake.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you are... Wow, wow. I think you're really... You hit that on the head, like, 100% when I smell that and hearing that description. Yeah.
Boom.
Lemon iced point pound
for,
cake.
Point for Rebecca.
Or, like, if anyone's had, like, a very lemony poppy seed cake. With, a vanilla icing over it. Because the first thing that actually jumped out to me, which I think is interesting in the smell, is, like, a marshmallowy vanilla-iness on the nose. And so then
I get a lot of the lemon.
Oh, there's tons of lemon in this.
Yeah.
It smells so lemony. So does it say anything on the bottle about how they did their style of goose? Did they do a 1, 2, and 3 year?
Traditional German sour wheat beer brewed with coriander and salt, but this time we decided to citrus it up and threw some ultra tart yuzu juice into the mix.
Okay.
Yuzu, I don't know. Whatever that is. I guess it has to be a fruit.
So it sounded like they said that they were doing it as like a goes. That's interesting. I guess it is a goes.
This is our interpretation of a goes.
Oh, okay. Why did I think this was a goose? Well, I screwed up. Oh well. But that's what we have. I don't have any other gooses, honestly, so this is what we could do. Oh, actually, if you want, we could also try an oud brun. Nah, that's gonna be too much.
We have a lot of beer.
We got enough.
Sorry, listeners.
Yeah, that was my screw up. But anyway, we have another version of a goes suit.
Totally different than the last one. Yeah,
it's very different.
What is this?
When I looked it up, it had said it was a goose. But, oh well.
That's not what it says on the bottle.
Internet, you're wrong. I hate you.
Did you read the bottle?
No.
See, a woman would read the bottle.
Yeah. But oh well.
The man would just look up on the internet.
Oh well, it's another sour beer, and it's one that we can inform people if it's good or not.
I'm going to look up what this yuzu thing is.
I'm getting a little bit of a flowery aspect when I'm smelling it now, a little bit more.
Okay.
I am getting, actually, the more I smell it, I'm getting a little bit of, like, that salinity, like seawater. But it's not, like, aggressive. Like, when you smell seawater, sometimes it can be kind of offensive and aggressive in the smell. This is not that. It's, like, very subtle.
Okay. This is it's a citrus fruit that looks somewhat like a very small grapefruit. It can be yellow or green. Very aromatic. It's used in, like, Asian cuisine, Japanese, Korean, Western uses.
So when we're smelling, when we were saying we're smelling a lot of lemon, it's probably that yuzu.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, a citrus as well. I already tasted this.
Oh.
And I want to see real quick, I want you to try it and see what your initial reaction is. Because I can tell you, I'm guaranteeing that I'm tasting a lot of that yuzu. And this is probably it definitely is the most sour of these beers that we've had. So it's properly placed. I thought it was a goose, so I put it at the end, should be the most sour, and it ended up being the most sour, even though it ended up being a goza. So it's properly placed in the line.
I just want to, like, eat it. Like,
well, did you drink it? So try it. Tell me what you think there. It's a really good kick of sourness, but it backs off after that.
Yes.
Like, it kicks you hard, and then it backs off.
I was going to be like, oh, I'm not going to be able to like this. And then I finished it, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like, the sourness hits you up front, and then as it's backing off, the salinity goes up a little bit. You're kind of left more with like, a saltiness in your mouth. But you're definitely getting that yuzu, which is very lemony in its flavor. I'm trying to see if I get that icing aspect, like that vanilla marshmallowiness.
I feel like I do.
Yeah, I could get it. It's super faint, though. You get a lot more in the nose.
It's like right as it finishes.
Yeah, I can see that. You get a lot more in the nose, though.
Man, that is a good beer.
Yeah. That's nice. Glad you tried it.
Yeah.
It was tasty. It's starting to create a bit of phlegm in my mouth, though. Which, you know, sour things will do that. So this being the most sour one on the table, by far, it's creating... The other ones that weren't really creating much of any phlegm. This is definitely creating some phlegm, because it's got a decent enough sourness to it. So, anyway. So, what'd you think of the lineup overall?
Well, good. I initially was like, what do you say? I would probably like about 3 out of 4.
Yeah, that was my guess off podcast ahead of time. I told her. I was like, I feel like you'll probably like 3 of the 4. And that's pretty good in my opinion for someone who says they don't really like sours.
But I feel like, you know, after sampling all the beers you had during the sour tournament, I didn't like a fair amount of them because they were so sour. Like,
yeah, a lot of them were very aggressive.
Ripped your taste buds off. Yeah. Sour. These are just much more subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're all low ABV. Two Gozas, one American Wild, and a Flanders Red. You know, if I went and busted out that Oud Bruin right now, which is a 12 ounce, it's small, it would be significantly more. So.
Yeah. I mean, and I've had tasted other sour beers that are like that. It's just this lineup is a little more on the mild side, which I like.
Yeah. Although, you know, if you keep hitting this Westbrook's Gozu, I mean, you're building up some real phlegm because the tart, that sourness, it kind of builds off of each sip. The more sips you take, like, the sourness builds off of the sourness that was already there. So, it starts building up after a while, but, you know. So, here we go. Now, how would you rank these?
This is tough.
Least favorite to most favorite, or most favorite to least favorite. However you want. Well, just do it most to least.
See, I feel like I'm really tied.
Okay, you can say
tied for first, I feel like, is going to be the Wicked Weed and the Westbrook.
Okay. The Passiflora Blanc and the Gozu.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you would tie those up first.
I would.
And then after that?
And then I think I might have to say the When the Light Goes Out.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no. That's at the bottom. Least favorite. That's my least favorite.
Okay.
So then the Floss, and then the When the Light Goes Out.
Okay, got it. I would give a... I was having a hard time between the Gozu and the Passiflora Blanc as well.
Mm.
But I think I would give the slight edge to the Passiflora Blanc because...
That surprises me.
You know, I feel like there's a lot of great stuff going on in the Gozu, but I feel like there's even more layers in that Passiflora Blanc, and it's so much more delicate and nuanced, mm-hmm. in my opinion. It just seems a little more finessed to me.
Yeah, I could see that.
Although I feel like they're so close. I'm being really nitpicky.
They're really
about it.
Yeah. I was gonna say they're so close, and that's why I tied them. But I personally would probably give the edge to the Westbrook.
Okay, that's fine.
But
I would give the edge to the Wicked Weed one. So that's how I put it. I do the Passiflora Blanc, the Gozu. I think after that, I would go When the Light Goes Out.
Oh, okay.
I do like that. I like the kind of roasty malt aspect, a little bit of that soy sauce coming through. I like that. And then the Floss by Slapmutsk. But I like them all.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't say that, you know, I don't like this one, I don't like this one. I like them all. I think they're all good. So, happy times. I like these beers. Okay. This is going to be fun after we're done with this to just go between all of them, just like, oh, I'll try a little bit of this one right now, a little bit of this one, and jump around.
Yeah, that's always fun after these.
So much fun. I think that's one of the main reasons I get so excited about doing these episodes. I'm like, after we're done, we're going to have all this extra beer from these four beers left, and we can just, like, jump around. Definitely, I'm the type of person who likes my samplers.
Yeah.
My beer samplers, so.
Okay.
All right, you have any questions about sours now? You feel good about sours?
Feel good.
Would you feel like now you would say to people, instead of saying, I don't really like sours, you'd say, I like some sours.
Yeah, or, definitely.
I like sours, just not all of them.
Yeah.
I'm good. People out there, if you're listening and you haven't really had sours before, or you have had them and you hate them, you think you hate them, go out and try something. You know, try something sour. Go with the lighter stuff, like we were trying a bunch of the lighter stuff on here, you know. Go get a Goza. Go get a Flanders Red. I would personally start with, like, a Flanders Red.
Or
some easy American wild ales. You know, like the Wicked Weed Passiflora Blanc, I think is a very easy one people could get in with. And then kind of work your way up. Then you can go to things like the... Like we had on the tournament, like the Sang Noir and the Bourbonic Plague.
See, I don't like any of those.
Tarted Darkness and all those things, which are real sour. So, but anyway, awesome episode. Thanks, Rebecca. Yet another successful style episode. Sorry for the screw up with thinking I had a goose and not reading the bottle. But it ended up being a great beer. And
next time I'm going to have to check the bottles.
Yeah, I think
I'll have to double check you.
You should. You definitely should. And who knows what our next style episode will be, because who knows what the next Brutal Battle Royale will be.
I think I know.
Oh, you think you do? I think I know, too. I think I have it picked out. We'll just see if other people are on board. Okay. But anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you want to correspond with us, if you have ideas, actually, for next Brutal Battles you want to see us do, any particular style, or if you have particular beers you want us to try, or you want us to do any new offshoots, you know, extra episodes, which we do from time to time. Like the time that we got that cookie beer pack from Flying Dog and did the beer and the cookies side by side. Any extra stuff that you're like, hey, I've always wanted to hear about this or always wanted to do this, send the idea in and we'll see what we can do. You can send it to brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com. Another thing I wanted to ask real quick is if people could just give us some ratings and reviews on iTunes, because that helps us get some more visibility, gets more interaction with fans, gets more fans in general, and that's good for the podcast, because I want to get more feedback. I just want to see, you know, what we can improve, what people already like, and get ideas on beers and styles and all this stuff.
Well, it's also nice to know that, like, someone else besides, like, my family is listening to the podcast.
Which, we have had people we don't know at all contact
us and
say,
there's a handful of fans, we think.
Well, I think there are more than that, but there are a handful of fans who have contacted us.
Yes, which but is that's the thing. Always nice.
Like, the way that I listen to podcasts, I typically don't reach out to the podcasts. You know, like, that's I just listen to them, and I enjoy them, And that's...
Do you rate them on iTunes?
No, typically not.
See? So you need to do that. You need to practice what you preach.
I guess it's like good karma. If I do it, then other people will do it. And, okay.
It's like the whole pay it forward, random acts of kindness.
Yeah. Pay the ratings forward there and you reviews. Go. Cool. Well, thank you so much, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. And please don't forget until next time to...
Keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.